And you good people are apathetic, and some of you will say this is imagination. You innocent Americans are not willing now, before war eventuates, and before a neutrality act is passed, you are not willing to bestir yourselves to keep America for Americans and to preserve George Washington's policy of no foreign entanglements.
Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't too bewitched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denied.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after meat workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. Postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Perhaps you remember that only a couple of years ago, George W. was in a public tizzy over the multi-billion dollar financial scandals pouring out of the executive suites of Wall Street and America's largest corporations. Ripped off investors were howling for blood and the stories of corporate corruption were on the front page. So George Reformer Man Bush leapt to the rescue. He loudly demanded tough new rules to govern greedy CEOs, and he picked William Donaldson to serve as the new top cop on the Wall Street beat. 2 years later, where's Reformer Man? There he is, behind the scenes at the SEC. But he's taken off his reformer cape. Now he's quietly trying to undercut his top cop and to water down those tough new governance rules he once demanded. Donaldson naively thought that Bush really wanted to crack down on corporate finagling. So he has proposed several new rules, including one that would allow shareholders to choose a few independent board members, rather than having all of the corporation's board handpicked by the CEO. Oh, the shrieks of horror that this caused among CEOs. Hence, the Business Roundtable, the lobbying front for CEOs of America's largest corporations, has swarmed the SEC. Its lobbyists are demanding a substitute rule that guts Donaldson's reform, turning the shareholders' vote for independent board members into a sham. George the Reformer is siding with the CEOs, even dispatching his Treasury Secretary, John Snow, a former leader of the Business Roundtable, by the way, to lobby Donaldson and other SEC officials to vote for the sham. We need not be surprised, since Bush has been busy raising millions of dollars in campaign funds from these same CEOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, Donaldson, however, has not yet buckled to Bush and the lobbyists. To buck him up, call his office and ask that he enact real reform by supporting shareholders, not CEOs. 202-942-0100.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, our contest continues. Nobody, it's been 2 months now since Congressman Tom Tancredo here on the air, the Republican from somewhere out west, or Colorado, I think. And I said, Congressman, can you name one piece of legislation that was proposed and passed by the Bush administration that had as its primary beneficiaries we the people, or the enhancement of democracy, as opposed to having as its primary beneficiaries some corporate interest that contributes money to the Republican Party? And he was unable to come up with one. And yesterday I posed the question in the third hour of our program, and we had a couple of people take a shot at it, but nobody has been able to answer that question. So our ongoing contest, I'll give a free copy of my book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America, to anybody who can answer that, who can come up with even one single example of a piece of legislation that the Bush administration has proposed and passed that has as its primary beneficiaries we the people, or the enhancement, the propagation of freedom in the United States, as opposed to some corporate beneficiaries. And we got some cute answers yesterday. And witty answers. They're fine, but the book is going to go to somebody who's got the real answer. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson, 1779. He said, "Our citizens may be deceived for a while, and may have been deceived, but as long as the presses can be protected, we may trust to them for light." What does it mean for the presses to be protected? What does it mean to have a free press in the United States? How is it working? What about this mea culpa from the New York Times just a day or two ago? Several articles about it. I want to share some information with you about that. In our second hour, is Iraq slipping back into a theocratic state? Did you know that in Fallujah right now, on Sunday, four guys were dragged through town in the back of a pickup truck, stripped to their undershorts, their backs bleeding from 80 lashes in Fallujah for selling alcohol? That was their crime. And in our third hour, how much damage has George Bush done to our economy? And, what's it going to take? How much damage has he done to our economy? 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our number if you'd like to enter our contest. Before we get to that, first of all, I have the Daily Mislead. Yes, indeed, another little bit of information from the Bush administration. Bush ignores sick 9/11 firefighters and cops. This from the misleader.org. Over the last month, President Bush has repeatedly recounted how he was inspired by the courage of the firefighters and the police in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. He recounted how, when standing atop a pile of rubble at Ground Zero, he was told by a firefighter, "Don't let me down!" But more than 2 years later, he continues to ignore the needs of firefighters and police officers, although not Halliburton, by the way, who are now, or any of the other contractors who are being paid $100,000 a person a day to be in Iraq. But pardon my digression. Anyhow, he's ignoring the needs of firefighters and police officers who are now suffering the adverse health effects from the rescue efforts at Ground Zero. The situation has reached a head. Yesterday, 1,700 cops and firefighters, 1,700, were forced to sue in court for the medical help they desperately need. Of course, Bill Frist made his fortune in the hospital, taking public hospitals private and squeezing the blood out of you and me to make a multi-million dollar family fortune, is opposed to what he euphemistically refers to as tort reform. George Bush is on that bandwagon. Let's not let these people sue. But anyhow, they did yesterday. Well, the president's very first campaign commercial used photos of coffin-draped corpses being pulled from the rubble. It was actually a staged picture, but, most people didn't realize that. The White House has sought to hide evidence that Ground Zero firefighters and cops were exposed to hazardous toxins. Specifically, the White House Council on Environmental Quality intervened to doctor EPA press releases that were supposed to warn the public about toxins near Ground Zero. Remember when this happened? The press releases were modified to claim that the air was safe, despite the fact that there was no adequate scientific evidence to substantiate the claim. And the people at the EPA knew this. The White House Council on Environmental Quality was headed by James Conaton. Once again, my friends, the head of the White House Council on Environmental Quality that leaned on the EPA to tell the firefighters and cops in New York City that Ground Zero was safe, they could go in there, and all the workers and people from all over the country, the guy who leaned on the EPA to doctor that report, the head of the White House Council on Environmental Quality, before he was brought into the administration by George Bush, was a lawyer for the asbestos industry fighting against people who had asbestos-related diseases. He represented companies in toxic pollution cases. When Ground Zero firefighters and cops began getting sick, the White House then tried to block $90 million in funding for medical treatment. When Congress forced the administration to accept the $90 million, the administration then delayed that money and threatened to shut down the health screening program. Even today, the New York City Police Department has been denied much-needed health grants. And as I said, yesterday they went to court to sue. Another mislead, our daily mislead, from courtesy of the Bush administration. 1-866-889-8894, our question, what piece of legislation has the Bush administration put forth and passed that benefits primarily we the people as opposed to corporate interests. We've got a couple of callers here. Michael in Atlanta believes he has an answer. Hey, Michael, what's your idea on this?
I want to get a crack at it, and it may take a little bit of tweaking, but I think it's going to work.
Okay.
The Hydrogen Fuel Initiative.
No, sorry. The Hydrogen Fuel Initiative that the Bush administration proposed is not a true hydrogen fuel initiative. Most of the scientists who talk about hydrogen fuels say, for example, we could use solar cells to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. We could store that hydrogen. You can transport it. You can move it around. You could put, windmills. You could take the tides. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to get kinetic and heat energy and convert it into hydrogen, which is then a good fuel. The Bush administration's hydrogen proposal is to take gasoline, hydrocarbons, and run them through a catalytic converter or a converter, essentially, a fuel cell that splits the hydrogen out of the fuel, out of the oil. And they specifically put that into the energy policy. It is not a true hydrogen policy. It is an oil industry giveaway. And, in fact, they gave $1 billion to the oil industry to help develop ways to develop hydrogen from oil. So, sorry, that won't do it. Good try, though, Michael. Good try.
Okay,
I appreciate it. Keep on trying.
Well, I was going to say, at least you would get new fuel cell technology and cars out of it.
They're still using number one, they're still using gasoline. Number two, it's been a huge giveaway to the industry. And number three, they not only ignored, they excluded the people who are actually doing the work in the real hydrogen technology. Now, this was a giveaway to industry and nothing else. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, our contest. David in Monroe, Michigan, has an idea. Hey, David, what do you think?
Well,
yeah, you're live on the air.
There is a legislation for We the People by the Bush administration. He never did one.
Well, that's my point. I mean, if somebody can find one for me.
The trick question is, if this don't exist.
Oh, it's a trick question. Well, it may be. It may be. And I'm an optimist. And I have to believe that in 3.5 years of running this country, that one piece of legislation might have come out of this administration. You can go back through virtually every administration, find all kinds of things, from Kennedy's Peace Corps to Roosevelt creating Social Security. And, those are the biggies, of course. I mean, there's thousands of little ones. Nixon signing into law the Environmental Protection Act, creating the Environmental Protection Agency. What has the Bush administration done? Well, maybe nothing. Maybe nothing. So I'm sorry.
I mean, I had to change jobs because of him.
Yeah. How? What happened with that, David?
When he came out with the 40-hour overtime law he was trying to pass, and construction companies started cutting back the 40 hours, waiting for that to pass.
Amazing, amazing.
So
yeah.
I went into truck driving, and now the fuel prices are killing me.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the brave new world of George W. Bush. David, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. John Kerry has gotten his foreign endorsement. No doubt the talking heads on the Reich wing will be all in a tizzy about this. Hans Blix, the Swedish diplomat, has come out in favor of John Kerry. You get this is today there was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal, representing this as a scandal.
Mr. Kerry remarked in March that foreign leaders were privately supporting his candidacy. Mr. Blix has now revealed the kind of foreigners he was referring to. Yes, men of integrity.
I mean, what, Blix is a foreign leader? I mean, what is he? He led the inspection team. Anyhow, here's from the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Blix told a Danish newspaper last month that Iraqis have suffered more from the war than they did under the reign of Saddam Hussein. Short term, probably. Long term, no, I disagree. In a recent interview with a French newspaper, and who knows, if this is taken out of context or not. In a recent interview with a French newspaper, he said President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair, quote, may have been sincerely convinced there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, just like some were convinced of the existence of witches in the 18th century. End quote. Yeah, I'll agree with that. A speech in Chicago in March, the Wall Street Journal notes, Blix said the war in Iraq has only made the threat of terrorism worse. And boy, has it. I've got several reports to share with you today. Al-Qaeda is growing. Our invasion of Iraq, which had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, had nothing to do with the war on terror, has created we have become the poster boys of Al-Qaeda. Well, we'll get into that later on in the program. Anyhow, so Blix pointed that out, and for some reason the Wall Street Journal thinks that's bad. And so then, you know, this Italian newspaper La Stampa, question, are you tracking the U.S. presidential campaign? Blix, I place my trust in the multilateralism, that is, as in, let's work together, other nations. It's not just us going it alone. The multilateralism of Democratic candidate John Kerry, and in any event, Blix said, I think that the whole world should vote on November 2nd because so much depends on the outcome of that vote. So George W. Bush, sorry, the weapons inspector that you pulled out of Iraq, you wouldn't let him continue his inspection. No, Saddam did not kick him out. George Bush kicked him out so he could begin precipitously, before he had United Nations approval, an invasion of a country that represented no threat to us, and now over 800 of our young men are dead. Hans Blix, supporting John Kerry. It's Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Talking about the things you definitely can't explain. The mythology is that Lush Bimbo, Rush, whatever his name is, Rush Bimbo, you know who I'm talking about. Anyhow, that he invented talk radio. Actually, Father Coughlin invented talk radio, and he had something to say about the media and talking about war. And I think it's a great segue into what I want to talk about here in this hour. I want to get into in some more detail an article and editor and publisher. Here's just a little clip from April 4th, 1939. Father Coughlin. One third of America. Listen to him.
My friends, will that sentence which I have just read arouse you to action? And you good people are apathetic, and some of you will say this is imagination. You innocent Americans are not willing now, before war eventuates, and before a neutrality act is passed, you are not willing to bestir yourselves to keep America for Americans and to preserve George Washington's policy of no foreign entanglements.
Father Coughlin ranting on. He checkered past, of course. He started out, it's Roosevelt or ruin, all in favor of Roosevelt. And then he was very actively against our involvement in World War II. And that was a little piece of that. And then, he changed his position a few times. But anyhow, I thought it was an interesting clip. Here we have the News Bureau of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Has the humanities department has put together a study. It's actually somebody's PhD thesis or something. It's called Uncovering the Rationales for the War in Iraq, the Words of the Bush Administration, Congress, and the Media from September 12, 2001 to October 11, 2002. Oh, it's the senior honors thesis by Devin Largio. And she and her professor, Scott Alpheus, believe the study is the first of its kind. Here, quite a few rationales have been given for going to war in Iraq. 27 of them, in fact. 27 of them. Rationales for going to war in Iraq. For example,
first, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons.
Good question.
While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Yeah, that one of the 27, right? The most serious dangers of our age. We have gone from the five front runners. Speaking of flip-flops, I mean, the ultimate flip-flops here from the Bush administration. First of all, it was about 9/11. Well, then it wasn't about 9/11. George finally fessing up and having to say, sorry.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No, war is peace. Remember George Orwell's 1984? The most famous saying of Big Brother was, war is peace.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah. Well, so anyhow, number one was this idea that it was 9/11. Turns out Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, even though the majority of people who watch faux news or listen to right-wing radio think he did. He didn't. And even the President of the United States has said so. Colin Powell has said so. Everybody knows this. I mean, anybody who pays any attention. Then he said it's the war on terror. Well, it turns out that, you know, other than Saddam sending $25,000 to suicide bombers at Hamas in Israel, which is no small thing. I mean, it's something that's worthy of international condemnation. We should have done something about. But, you know, bombing a country, killing 800, or allowing, you know, having over 800 of our own soldiers die, having over 4,000 of them lose limbs, is that an appropriate response? No. Well, then we got a few others here. We got a few others. We'll continue with a list in just a moment. This is fascinating stuff. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after migrant workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. Postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature, linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Just need some place where I can lay my head.
guys. Welcome back. I don't know.
He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said.
No was all he said. Well, here's George Bush. Another rationale for war.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do.
And we do, yes.
Does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
No, we got to go over there. I mean, it's really important. We got to get over there right away. I mean, this is just like, you know, really critical. I mean, after all, you know, it's...
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
No, well, thank you, Mr. Cheney, Vice President Cheney, yes. The five frontrunners, War on Terror, of the 27 different rationales at various times, the flip-flops and shifting sands of the Bush administration, the War on Terror, number one, prevention of the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, another one, the fact that he had weapons of mass destruction, another one, the lack of weapons inspections. George Bush actually, in two different speeches, said that Saddam had thrown out the inspectors. Never happened. Bill Clinton withdrew the inspectors in 98 so that, you know, at the suggestion of Scott Ritter, so that he could bomb a few buildings that Ritter felt that he was, you know, Saddam was playing games with. And George Bush? Well, the UN, I mean, you know, you could say the UN withdrew the inspectors. Hans Blix and El Baradei came back to give their report to the United Nations and say, well, you know, we haven't, not only have we not found anything, but we've been given absolutely free and unfettered access to every place in the country. Do you remember that speech? I mean, he was quite explicit. He went through this whole thing about how, you know, we were showing up at places where they clearly didn't know we were going to show up. You know, the guards were sound asleep. The gates were in a, you know, locked or not locked or what. Anyhow, so Bush says, well, you know, the whole world is saying, give it another month. We're talking about the possibility. Yes, you lost 3,000 people on 9/11. And this has, number one, this has nothing to do with that. You could always tell one of the conservative, I was going to say Republican, but there are even a few Democrats who do this, like Joe Lieberman, the conservative liars. When as soon as somebody mentions the word Iraq, they invoke 9/11. It's like saying, we need to invade Canada because of the Mexican-American War. So anyhow, lack of weapons inspections, well, Bush said, no, we're not, you know, we're going to bomb the country. I mean, you're not going to go back in there and finish your job. Sorry. We're in a hurry here. We got to get a war underway. We got, you know, Halliburton is waiting. Halliburton is actually losing money the first year and a half of the Bush administration. Dick Cheney's company. Dick Cheney's stock options were becoming worth less and less. Halliburton was going to have a harder time paying him his millions of dollars in severance pay. And now, of course, Halliburton is one of the more profitable companies in America, between the fact that they reincorporated a large chunk of themselves offshore so they don't have to pay American taxes, and the fact that they got these no-bid contracts where they can just pass this stuff out to everybody. Okay, so anyhow, lack of weapons inspections. Removal of the regime. Yes, here's another one the cons will say. Back in 1998, Bill Clinton signed an act that said that the United States is in favor of changing the regime of Saddam Hussein. Yep. That act said nothing about declaring war on him. I mean, there's a whole world of difference. From the end of World War II until the collapse of the Soviet Union, we had an official policy of changing the regime of the USSR. We never invaded them. The United States, we've had a few. We've had to rationalize things a few times with what turned out to be lies, like the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that led us into Vietnam, LBJ, apparently knowing or finding out soon thereafter that it was a lie, that ship in the Gulf of Tonkin was not under attack. nonetheless used that as the rationale for the Vietnam War. And what did it bring us? It brought us utter disaster. But the bottom line is that this country has always subscribed to the notion which is considered a fundamental tenet of civilization and has been since at least the 15th century. Some would argue since the 13th century, since the tail end of the Crusades, that you only invade another country in self-defense. And that those nations that invade other countries, I mean, here, Hitler declared war on Russia, and what did he do? He immediately invaded France. And paid for it. And the people, and many of the people responsible were brought up on war crimes acts. Of course, the United States right now is aggressively trying to get us out of the treaties. You know, Bill Clinton actually signed an international treaty that would have held members of United States administrations, just like every other country in the world, subject to the World Court for war crimes. George Bush reversed it recently. Another reason that George Bush gave in the State of the Union speech, he said that we should overthrow Saddam because he likes to flaunt his hostility toward America. Yeah, that's a good reason. That's a real good reason. That's worth 804 lives or more. We had two young men from the state of Vermont. We've had one murder in Vermont in the last 2 years. We have now lost 10 young men in Iraq. 10. He also claimed that Iraq allowed weapons inspectors into the country and then threw them out. Yeah, he called Iran, Iraq, and North Korea the axis of evil. There are the axis of evil. That's a rationale. And they point out in this study, from February 2002 on, if you look at the databases of the newspapers, the news stories, you find that Iraq actually gets more hits than Osama bin Laden. Who's the guy who hit us at the trade towers? Osama bin Laden. Who's the guy who's getting all the news stories? Saddam Hussein. They point out February 2002, President Bush pulls the switch, and the gap grows over time. This fascinating study out of the University of Illinois. America is not a kingdom, and we don't elect kings. It's number nine in our 10 ways to take back democracy in America. We need to turn back the imperial presidency. And here now we find the media itself beginning to acknowledge. Chris Matthews did a great job of it last night, but on it goes here. The New York Times acknowledging that they were, not only were they duped, but that they shouldn't have been duped, that they weren't bothering to check facts. That when this administration lied to them, they didn't bother to ask the hard questions. They didn't bother to ask for follow-up. They didn't bother to ask for documentation. When Cheney and Feith and Wolfowitz spoon-fed Ahmed Chalabi to Judith Miller at the New York Times, and she wrote these glowing front-page stories about the horrors of Saddam, that nobody bothered to check it out. Editor and Publisher is a magazine for the publishing industry. And Greg Mitchell is, I believe, he's the editor of Editor and Publisher. Yeah, he's the editor of Editor and Publisher. And he wrote this op-ed piece, published today. After months of criticism of the New York Times coverage of alleged weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, mainly directed at star reporter Judith Miller, the paper's editors, this being the New York Times, in an extraordinary note to readers this morning, finally tackled the subject. It's not on the front page of their website, by the way. Acknowledging it was past time that they do so. While it does not, Greg Mitchell suggests, in some ways go nearly far enough, this low-key but scathing self-rebuke is nothing less than a primer, or primer, depending on where you grew up in the country, on how not to do journalism, particularly if you are an enormously influential newspaper with a costly invasion of another nation at stake. They point out that the New York Times doesn't mention Judith Miller. I mean, I don't want to quite compare her with Jason Blair, but she was, because she wasn't just making up stuff out of whole cloth. She was quoting people who were making up stuff from a whole cloth and, you know, not questioning it. The editors of the New York Times pointed out six articles as being especially unfortunate. Articles in the New York Times that led Americans to believe that Iraq represented a threat to the United States because nobody at the New York Times bothered to check their facts. And Judith Miller, as editor and publisher points out, had a hand in four of those six articles. Editor and publisher magazine actually a year ago started asking the New York Times to check up on Judith Miller's work. They point out, he says, while refusing to name Miller, the Times critique plainly and persistently finds fault. In referring to one of the bogus Miller pieces, the editors explain, quote, this is what the New York Times says of themselves. It looks as if we, along with the administration, were taken in. Then, just as tellingly, they add, and until now, we have not reported that to our readers. He wraps this thing up, this op-ed piece, or editorial. Another Miller article from April 21, 2003, that featured an Iraqi scientist, who later turned out to be an intelligence officer, seemed to go out of its way to provide what the Times was seeking for the invasion, end quote. But in hindsight, there was just one problem, quote, the Times never followed up on the veracity of this source or the attempts to verify his claims. Good on you, Greg Mitchell. Well done. An editorial and editor and publisher, the America's oldest journal covering the newspaper industry, titled The New York Times, in editor's note, finds much at fault in its Iraq WMD coverage. And boy, is it. This, the liberal media that helped lead us into war, that helped deceive us into war, that helped confuse us into war. On May 24th, George Bush, 2 days ago, he gave this speech, right? He was trying to clean up this fiasco in Iraq. Oh, we got this. A little math lesson here from TVNewsLies.org. It was a great website, TVNewsLies.org. A math lesson. I just have to share this with you. This is wonderful. Number of times George Bush used the word terrorist during his speech. 19. Number of times George Bush acknowledged any mistakes in planning the invasion and post-war occupation of Iraq. 0. Number of times George Bush explained how the invasion of Iraq was even remotely connected to the war on terror. 0. Number of times George Bush explained how anyone in the U.S. or the world is safer as a result of a preemptive war against Iraq. 0. Number of times George Bush explained why he has given 27 different rationales for a preemptive strike on a sovereign nation that posed no threat to the U.S. 0. Number of times George Bush explained why he refused to listen to the generals and statesmen and women who warned him about the quagmire he was about to enter. 0. Number of times George Bush explained why he ignored the report of the Army War College on Iraq and War on Terror. The War College itself regarding the danger of a preemptive war against Iraq. 0. The number of times George Bush acknowledged the deaths of thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians, men, women, and children, caused by his invasion and occupation of Iraq. 0. The number of times George Bush admitted to duping the nation and the world into believing that Iraq posed an imminent threat to the United States. 0. The number of times George Bush explained why the Iraqi people did not greet us as liberators with candy and flowers in hand. 0. Number of times George Bush explained his connection to Ahmed Chalabi and the false information that was used to justify a preemptive attack on Iraq. 0. The number of times George Bush explained why Halliburton was given huge unbid contracts in the rebuilding of Iraq when there were many other companies that could have done the work. 0. Number of times George Bush revealed that he has offered only limited, not full, sovereignty to the Iraqi interim government, with no power to enact their own laws. Zero. In fact, he went so far as to say we're going to give them full sovereignty. You hear what Tony Blair had to say about that? We'll get to that a little later in the show. It's fascinating. Number of times George Bush explained why the UN was irrelevant only months ago, but now is in full charge of selecting the interim Iraqi government? Zero! Number of times that George Bush explained why, since he took office, his administration has fought for exemption from war crimes prosecution, and why he removed Bill Clinton's signature from the International Criminal Court? Zero. Another math lesson. Number of Americans hurt or killed by an Iraqi terrorist prior to the U.S. invasion of Iraq? Zero. Number of threats to America or Americans made by Saddam Hussein that were not in response to American threats? Zero. Number of wars launched on Iraq by Iraq on America? Zero. Number of threats to launch war on Iraq by Saddam Hussein? Zero. And on it goes, on and on and on and on and on. Anyhow, I guess you get the point. We have been lied to. My friends, we have been lied to. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Exposing the con and conservative.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 806 for new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17. Call now, 800-505-1546.
New studies of mosquitoes might bring relief from mosquito bites. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Scientists know that mosquitoes find us by smelling our sweat, but they don't know the specific process behind it. They're one step closer to figuring it out, and that could lead to more effective mosquito repellents. John Carlson is a professor of molecular, developmental, and cellular biology at Yale University. He studied smell receptors on mosquito antennas to see how they react when they're exposed to various chemicals in human sweat. Carlson says the receptors react strongly to one specific chemical.
We've now found a particular receptor in the mosquito's antenna that is a very sensitive detector for a particular odor in human sweat. This particular receptor we've studied is only found in female antennae, not in male antennae, and that's consistent with the fact that it's only females that bite us. Another nice thing is that mosquitoes stop making this receptor after they've bitten someone, and that fits well with the fact that mosquitoes stop looking for people after they've bitten one.
Carlson says this research will help explain how mosquitoes find and bite people. Now that they know what receptor the mosquitoes use, they can identify odors that activate the receptors. Smells that attract mosquitoes could be used to lure the insects into traps. In addition, some odors might turn off the receptors on mosquito antennas. Those could be used to make repellents that keep mosquitoes from finding and biting people. These applications could be a great benefit for public health. Mosquitoes carry a variety of diseases that include yellow fever, West Nile virus, and malaria. Carlson says the most effective way of controlling these types of diseases is controlling the insects that carry them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today.
See, here's the bottom line. People do things either because they have a vision, a belief in something, or because they're trying to survive. You know, a lot of people, they work for survival. They have a job. They, you know, it's, and that's okay. I mean, that's just fine. Those few fortunate individuals and you know, actually, I suspect it may be as many as half the American workforce in one way or another actually feels that there's some mission to what they're doing. As a nation, there must be a mission. And the mission, the vision that has been held up until the conservative takeover of America, the Reagan Revolution, the Gingrich, the Grover Norquist saying we don't want to destroy government, we just want to shrink it to the point where we can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. George W. Bush, George Bush Sr. Up until then, the vision was one of democracy, of government of, by, and for the people. Since then, the vision has been one of, by, and for the corporations. And the corporations are making out very well. It used to be called war profiteering. You know, right after the Lincoln administration, people went to prison for what Halliburton is doing right now. Howard Dean's thoughts on the president's speech and the war.
Certainly they don't lack for brain power. I mean, they're smart people. But they ignored the facts.
Yeah.
You know, I supported the last four armed interventions the United States undertook in Afghanistan and Kosovo, Bosnia, and I supported President Bush's father when he went into Iraq the first time. This time, my basis for opposing the war was not because I'm a pacifist. Obviously, I'm not if I supported the four previous engagements. My opposition to the war was I didn't think the president was paying any attention to what was really going on. I thought there was a woeful ignorance of the facts on the ground in Iraq. There was and everything I'm about to say has now been admitted to by the administration. There was no link with Saddam Hussein. I mean, between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. There was no link between Saddam Hussein and the attacks in 9/11. There were no nuclear weapons. It turned out there were no weapons of mass destruction of any kind, which actually surprised me as well. This is an administration that does not believe that the facts matter. They believe that politics matters, and they believe that ideology matters. You cannot run a business, a state, a family, or a country if you don't think.
Yeah, if you don't have some sort of a vision, you can't run any of it. And the vision that the neocons are holding, the failed vision, the conservative vision of let the rich rule, and the neocon vision of we must be the world, the bully and the cop of the world, otherwise we're in trouble. They're both highly dysfunctional, terribly destructive, and ultimately damaging to democracy. It's Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
You've
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after migrant workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. Postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Despicable is not a word that major corporate executives are used to having hurled at them by high elected officials, but the honchos of Diebold Inc. recently got this very word right in their corporate face. The hurler was Kevin Shelley, California's Secretary of State, and he was referring to his experience with Diebold's electronic voting machines in California's March primary elections. Computer glitches plagued that election, jeopardizing its outcome. For example, thousands of San Diego voters were turned away from the polls because Diebold machines malfunctioned. A subsequent investigation by a state panel of experts on electronic voting found that this company, the second largest purveyor of touchscreen voting machines in the country, had violated state law by installing untested and uncertified software in its machines, then lied about it. Their performance, their behavior is despicable, Shelley bluntly said. He also put action behind his words, banning the use of more than 14,000 Diebold machines for this November's election, saying that the machines are not secure and reliable. He also recommended that criminal charges be filed for what he called fraudulent actions by Diebold. Shelley had earlier ruled that by 2006, touchscreen voting machines in California must produce a paper receipt so voters can verify the electoral choices they make on these corruptible computers. But after this year's unpleasantness with Diebold, Shelley says he's now exploring ways to speed up this requirement. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, in Maryland, a voters group has filed suit to block the use of all 16,000 of Diebold's virtual voting machines in their state unless a paper verification system is installed on each of them. It's all a part of the growing grassroots rebellion to prevent the electronic theft of our elections. To join the fight, go to www.verifiedvoting.org.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
So what do you do when you're tanking in the polls? When things aren't looking good, when the scandals are flying fast and furious? What would Machiavelli or Rove recommend? Might they recommend that you scare people? Terror alert, my friends. We need to start looking under beds. Maybe you'll find a communist there. No, I'm sorry. Wrong era. A terrorist. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. You're welcome to call anything you want. However, I am still looking for one thing this administration has done that benefits we the people or democracy instead of or primarily over corporate interests that contribute to former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie's Republican National Committee, or former oil man, failed oil man, I should add. He bailed out just before the stock in his corporation tanked. Securities and Exchange Commission looked into it, and the investigation was stopped by his father, George W. Bush, or oil man Dick Cheney. I mean, you know, which shall it be? Anyhow, after the First World War, you know, the Senator Gerald Nye, And I forget which state he was from. But anyhow, Nye began the, after World War I, he said, you know, it sure looks like there's been some war profiteering here. Now, this was after World War I. He was really repeating what had gone on after the Civil War. You know, have corporations taken advantage of a war? And might it even be that some corporations have pushed for a war or for our participation in a war in order to make themselves more profitable? And on September 4th, 1934, they called it the Munitions Investigating Committee, and they concluded, the official conclusion was that there was a strong link. Now, they didn't find it prosecutable. They couldn't find the smoking gun, but this is the language of the Senate findings: a strong link between the American government's decision to enter the war and the lobbying of the munitions industry. But that was World War I. In fact, while we were in World War I, but we've had this thing about John McCain saying, I don't understand why we're not being asked to sacrifice. Here we have, the Bush administration is spending money that we're borrowing from our grandchildren like drunken sailors in order to try to stimulate the economy. Yes, you give me a credit card with a $500 billion credit limit and let me share that with 100 million or more Americans, and I'll show you an economic recovery for a little while, at least through November. And McCain says, this is not how we do these things. You can't have guns and butter. You know, Lyndon Johnson's fatal error. And in 1917, World War I, the U.S. federal government adopted an excess profits tax, which continued until 1921, so that the corporations that were profiting from the war would have to give back some of that profit to the government. They did the same thing in the Second World War. The United States Congress passed, again, an excess profits tax during the Second World War, and we did it during the Korean War. In fact, Great Britain, from 1915 to 1921, World War I, had an excess profits tax on corporations of 40 to 80%, and during the Second World War, they taxed the profits of munitions industry, weapons industry manufacturers. Well, the excess profits. In other words, they said, okay, whatever profit you were making before we got into this war, you're entitled to continue making that. Say you're making a 3% profit, 5%, you can continue to make that. Anything more than that, they hit them with 100% tax. So last year we had several senators introduced the, quote, Sunshine in the Iraq Reconstruction Contracting Act, a law that would force the contractors to tell us what's going on, and that would allow the government to look into the nooks and crannies of these things. See, what's happened since World War I and World War II is corporations have been claiming human rights, the Fourth Amendment right of privacy. Yes, I know this administration would like to take it away from women. Many would like to even go back to before 1964, Griswold versus Connecticut, and make birth control illegal, much less abortion. But corporations have been claiming their rights of privacy, and because of this, opacity has ruled. I mean, the transparency has vanished. We have not been able to figure out, Halliburton, ever since Halliburton got involved in this war, they are making the, profits, millions and millions of dollars in profits. Is it appropriate? I mean, how much of that profit is just plain old-fashioned, good old-fashioned war profiteering, the kind of stuff that some corporations after the Civil War were put out of business for, that people were prosecuted for after World War I? We won't know, because under the Republican leadership of the United States Senate, the Sunshine in the Iraq Reconstruction Act was shot down. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom. I have a small bulletin here. Homeland Security announced today that there is a credible but nonspecific threat to George W. Bush's poll numbers.
Yes.
All Americans should be patriotically terrified and alert to the possibility that a political change might occur to voters in large concentrations. The color code will not change, but GOP fundraising centers will be kept manned and open 24 hours a day to counter the possibility that the president might be seen as a dork. This bone-chilling danger will be reassessed on November 8th.
There you go.
Take care.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Chris. Well said. Well said. And well read, actually. Usually I don't like people reading things on the air, but Chris is good at it. Reconstruction or and that was my opening point. Is there a serious terrorist threat against the United States? I certainly, in my mind, there always has been. I mean, 9/11 wasn't the first time we were attacked. Rahman, the blind sheikh. I mean, he tried to blow up the World Trade Center. Tim McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City building. We found a bunch of white wasp terrorists down in Texas with hundreds of pounds of high explosives just last year. Didn't hear much about it in the news, did you? Domestic terrorism. But, you know, I think it's legitimate that we be concerned about the fact that by virtue of our playing bully to the world, by our creation of Al-Qaeda in order to throw the Russians out of Afghanistan, are trying to play real politic here. You know, Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski, if you've read Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chess Game, you get an insight into this stuff. And it's coming back to haunt us. Yeah, it's real. And they're going to trot this thing out big time. They're going to trot this thing out big time. And let us hope and pray that these guys are not successful. That these guys being the terrorists. And at the same time, let us not be driven by fear. You know, it's very important that we be awake, that we be aware. For example, we're spending $200 billion in Iraq. It's $4.9 billion a month. We are rebuilding their schools. We are providing Social Security to them. We're not rebuilding our own schools. We're worried about our own Social Security. We're giving them free medical care. You know, on and on it goes. And yet, the estimate of the administration is that if you want to protect American ports, that's our most vulnerable point right now, are our ports. Remember the movie, I think Bruce Willis was in it, you know, where they shipped an atomic bomb in a Coke machine or a soda pop vending machine in a container into Baltimore? It was a few years ago. Anyhow, that to protect our ports, to inspect literally every single piece of freight coming into the United States, at its point of disembarkation, at its point of departure, that is, dispatching American inspectors all over the world, would cost between $6 and $8 billion. About 5.5 weeks of what we're spending in Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11 or terrorism. To defend ourselves against that form of terrorism, $6 to $8 billion, the Bush administration says, no, we are not going to do that. They have cut back. Bill Clinton put an extra 100,000 cops on the streets. George Bush took them back off. No, we're not going to do that. You've got cities and counties all across America who are crying, are angry. You've got police chief associations denouncing the Bush administration for not funding first responders. It's enough to turn you into a conspiracy theorist. It's enough to make you think, Well, maybe they want something terrible to happen here. Not that I'm suggesting that. But, geez, I mean, this is... Anyhow, the deconstruction of Iraq into the free market. I wanted to share a little bit of this with you. This is you know, Paul Bremer, back on May 26th of last year, a year ago this week, he said, Iraq is now open for business. A couple days ago, George Bush said, we're going to give them complete sovereignty. We're going to give them full sovereignty. Well, my question is Iraq slipping into a theocratic state? Or are we going to be successful in imposing this bizarre libertarian, super conservative economic vision on them of a small, wealthy ruling elite and a lot of very poor and terrified workers? Or is it going to be something in between? Let's look at what we're doing to bring this about. Let's take a look at what this administration is doing in Iraq with regard to those issues that may have to do with sovereignty, so-called sovereignty. 20 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire, no chain link fences, no Secret Service herding you away from where the president may speak. The real free speech zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software.
I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Some bright morning when this life is over, I'll fly away to that home on God's celestial shore.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Why wouldn't the networks run the Bush address a few days ago? Why did the major networks refuse to run the George Bush address? Well, the answer, they're only doing reality TV these days. Yes, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up? What's on your mind?
I went to the Philadelphia Zoo last week. I live pretty close to Philly. And I was appalled by all of the corporate ads everywhere. The African Safari was sponsored by Dodge. The Pico Primate Reserve was Pico, an energy company that I'm sure is doing more harm to the environment than good. The Children's Zoo was sponsored by Tasty Cake. And then just yesterday I read in the newspaper that corporations are paying for school field trips. So you could go to Petco on your field trip, and isn't that a great, great idea?
Well, not only that, you're finding now textbooks where it says if you have one, I don't know the brand, but I'll just pick one arbitrarily. If you have one Mars bar, and you divide it into three pieces, and you give two pieces to Ralph and one piece to Sally, what fraction of the Mars bar does Ralph have relative to Sally? They're putting brand names in school books that kids are using,
which is horrible. Because I actually read a study where you ask an 8-year-old, you show them two identical shoes, one from Kmart and one from Nike. The 8-year-old will say, oh, it doesn't matter, they're both all right. You ask a 12-year-old, and they're like, Kmart? Ha, I want the Nike. Yeah. So it's obviously it's getting implanted in their head. But my question was, when I was voicing my concerns to my friends that I went with at the zoo, they were like, well, somebody has to sponsor the exhibit, so what's so wrong about it? So how would you respond to that? Because I really couldn't come up with a good answer.
Well, the response is very straightforward. The zoos are among the things that we collectively have agreed is part of are part of the commons. That these are things that benefit us all. That we have decided that we are going to tax ourselves. We are going to collectively pay for, just like the streets, just like public parks, just like, the police department, the fire department. Somewhere along the line in the history of the world, and particularly in the history of the United States, and the first zoos in the United States go back into the early 1800s, we decided that a zoo was a good thing, and, because it's educational, it's, for a whole variety of reasons, whatever.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Zoo was the first zoo in America.
Yeah, okay, great.
And now it's Tasty Cake, sponsored by
Pico. I wonder if Ben Franklin had anything to do with it. He started so many things in Philadelphia, the post office and whatnot, the first library, the first public library. The same thing with public libraries. So anyhow, when we the people make the decision that this is part of the commons and therefore it's going to be run in a way that is going to be best for we the people, that is, it's going to be protected as part of the commons. It's going to be done in a way that doesn't have bias beyond what's best for society. If you want school children to learn about something, what do they need to learn? Let's bring in some experts. Let's talk about, what do they need to know about lions and tigers and bears? What do they need to know about endangered species? How do they, what do they need to know about whatever? Now, the problem is that when the money from we the people gets taken out of the commons and gets replaced by money from corporate interests, Those corporate interests then have influence over their over that process. And they may not be exercising that influence in a big way yet, but we're seeing it increasingly right across the board, particularly with things like, you know, NPR and public television, where they're no longer criticizing these large corporations that are sponsoring them and you know, making decisions about what displays should be in the zoo. I mean, can you imagine a corporation that is involved in drilling in a wildlife area that's wiping out an endangered species? Are they going to want that endangered species? Are they going to want that information to be in the zoo? I mean, that kind of thing. This is about the commons versus privatization. And privatization of the commons is always a bad idea, because it has taken the commons, that which we all collectively own, control, and should have some say in, and handing it over to a very few number of people who make decisions based not on what's good for America, but what's good for them in terms of profit. That's the bottom line. Brian, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after migrant workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. Postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature, linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Take the story of Carpenter Mike. He dropped his tools and his keys and left, and headed out as far as he could.
And welcome back, Tom Hartman. 27 minutes before the hour. You ever heard of U.S. Army Sergeant Samuel Provence? Or maybe it's Provence, P-R-O-V-A-N-C-E. Maybe you've heard of him if you've been paying attention to the news. He's the guy who first told the Pentagon about what was going on at Abu Ghraib prison. Well, the administration, our Take No Enemies administration, our administration that will out a CIA agent and senior administration official, outing not just a CIA, an entire operation that was involved in counterterrorism, and then will say, well...
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Well, this same administration finally caught up with Samuel Provence, the U.S. Army sergeant who blew the whistle on what was going on at Abu Ghraib. This Friday, he was, quote, called before his battalion commander, who yanked his clearance to work at top-secret sites and administratively flagged him, meaning he cannot receive honors, awards, or seek promotion. I don't think I had to comment further on that. In fact, I'm inclined not to, for fear I will overspeak. 25 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, I'm afraid that is the Army I knew, but another excellent program. Two quick thoughts, if I might. If, in fact, these oil profiteers that presently inhabit our White House are over in Iraq offering all kinds of benefits, including health care, education, and everything, attempting to buy the affections of the people while they're stealing the oil profits and rigging it. How will that set with his right-wing base? They don't believe in benefits. Do they know about that?
I think the majority of them don't. I think, there's been virtually no press coverage of it. I read the Iraqi Constitution on the air here, a month ago or so? Well, those provisions, I think it was
the only
Article
place
17.
Would probably be heard.
Yeah, I don't think so. And the other thing is that not only are the Iraqis getting benefits courtesy of the largesse of the American taxpayer, but so are the private contractors. And that is, I think, harming Bush with his right-wing base, because you've got people, true conservatives like John McCain, who I disagree with on many, many issues, but nonetheless, he actually believes in the idea of, having government be efficient, having government provide for defense, having transparency in government to a large extent. And Bush is just undoing all of that with the privatization of the military. The second largest army in Iraq is not the British Army. The British have about between 6,000 and 7,000 people there. The second largest army is private contractors, over 20,000 of them, at an average cost to you and me of $107,000 a year.
Well, the other thing that's going to take this hoax off a cliff, I think, Tony Blair right now is being very adamant that come June 30th, the Iraqis will be calling the shots. They could, in fact, say, take a walk. And if that's the case, that's not what the White House has in mind.
I've got that story. I was going to get to that. Wanted to share the little contrast there between what Tony Blair is saying and what George Bush is. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Dave, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Barb in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG, first-time caller. Hey, Barb, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am great. What's up?
Well, I just want to tell you, I just started listening a couple months ago, and I'm totally enjoying it.
Thank you.
It's a great, great program, much needed.
And it's on a great radio station. Be sure and let them know.
WTKG in Grand Rapids.
There you go.
How'd I do?
You did great.
All right, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you say. I learn more every day. But how are we ever going to get out of Iraq? There is what I'd like to know.
Yeah. Well, here's the question, Barb. There are like very big questions, and then there are smaller questions kind of embedded in them. Probably one of the biggest of all the questions is it possible that our form of government, what we call a democracy, or conservatives like to call a republic, you know, whatever you want to call it, that our form of government can simply be transplanted into a culture that has never experienced it before, and even if it is possible, could it be that is just an incredible form of cultural arrogance to say, well, you know, this is how it should be for you. I mean, that's a whole separate issue, and I don't want to get real deep into that. But I think there are no democracies in the Arab world at the moment. There are some that are moving in that direction, and frankly, I think if we stop messing with Iran. That, you know, within probably a decade, there actually may be a democracy there because there's a strong democracy movement. Jordan has been slowly moving in that direction. Egypt went backwards with Mubarak. But the bottom line is it even possible, number one? I don't think so, and at least not at the moment, and certainly not at the barrel of a gun. So the odds are very high that what we're going to have to do, and we're already doing it. We did it in Fallujah. In Fallujah right now, men are wearing beards. They're required to wear beards. Barbers have, by law, right, by the city fathers of Fallujah, barbers are no longer allowed to give Western haircuts. On Sunday, these four guys were paraded through town and, you know, stripped to their skivvies with 80 lashes, their backs covered with blood, dragged around in a pickup truck for all to see because they had sold alcohol. Because what happened? We decided, hey, this is a battle that we can't win, and so we backed out and we brought in a general, you know, a former Saddam guy, a former Ba'athist, and said, you take over, you do it for us. And I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see more and more of that. My guess is that what we're going to end up with is an Islamic state by and large, not unlike Iran. And you know, the question then becomes, might that actually be stable? Might that actually be a stable thing? I mean, Al-Qaeda has virtually no presence in Iran. Al-Qaeda had virtually no presence in Iraq, for that matter. If you have fairly stable governments, even if they're dictatorships, they tend not to like people like Osama bin Laden. And you know, he's a rabble-rouser. So
we as the voters, the people of this country, we the people,
yeah.
How do you wake up every day and say, I want to see good things happen, I want to see this end? I just can't imagine how it's ever going to, it's going to take years.
Yeah, it is. This is the problem. I mean, you know, Bush kicked over the bee. You know, he hit a beehive with a baseball bat, and now we're trying to put it back together. And there's all, you know, it's all these little pieces, and you got a bunch of bees flying around that are getting angry, and other bees from, you know, it's an imperfect metaphor, but
so there is an end though someday.
Yeah, I agree with John Kerry's position on this, that even though George Bush has appropriated most of John Kerry's suggestions about, you know, international. I mean, 6 months ago Bush was saying that the UN was irrelevant. Now he is saying the UN is going to take 100% full responsibility for this thing. And he's basically begged them for it. But he hasn't done his homework. He hasn't done it right. He isn't bringing in the rest of the world. NATO has already said, I'm sorry, we're overextended. We're not going to do this. I really think that the key to making some sort of a transition that's going to prevent this, that's going to prevent Iraq from absolutely melting down and at least transiting into something that's stable, even if it's a stability that we wouldn't want for ourselves, like, for example, an Islamic state, you know, or a theocratic state like Iran. If we want any kind of reasonable transition that doesn't turn it into a lawless state like 80% of Afghanistan is right now, and certainly all of Afghanistan was before we went in there, we have to get George Bush out of the White House and get in somebody who is, as Hans Blix said, a multilateralist or a multinationalist, who is willing, who plays well with others, somebody who's willing to get.
Kerry does have a plan.
Oh, Kerry's explicit about his plan. He's been saying it all along, and George Bush has appropriated it. Kerry six months ago, a year ago, he was saying, you know, bring in the United Nations, bring in Arab forces, bring in NATO if you can, but ideally through the United Nations, you want to get all the other Arab countries in that region involved, and the only way, and then you know, of course, try to get the European countries and others involved, but particularly the local Arabs. And this is what George Bush's father did in the Gulf War. And, you know, we have spent more now so far on this war in Iraq than we spent fighting all of World War I in inflation-adjusted dollars, in real, you know, the actual cost in terms of treasure to America.
And, Bush needs to be voted out, and I just hope you keep up the good work and keep us motivated out here in this country.
Okay, Barb, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in, and I will do my best. Anyway, I think that if Kerry were in office, you know, he would get on a plane, he would go around, he would meet with these folks, he'd say, hey, come on, let's make this thing happen, and they would say, fine. Bush has thumbed his nose at them. He has called them names. You know, oh, it's old Europe, you know, Rumsfeld. The incredible arrogance of these people has just been so destructive to us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Harry in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Harry, what's up?
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. You know, this sudden announcement with this terrorist stuff going to happen here.
Yeah.
I somehow smelled that scenario a couple of months ago. I'm not a soothsayer, but it just seemed the pieces seemed to fall in together. It seems now that this is a great opportunity for Ashcroft and Ridge to play their little trick on harassing undesirable people, just like Nixon did on the Vietnam War.
Yeah, we had a lot of, they're unpatriotic. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that the comparison is a good clean one, frankly. And Harry, it wouldn't surprise me if there actually are people in the United States who are planning to do really massive, awful stuff sometime between now and November. Certainly,
right.
You know, you look at what happened in Spain, and I think that caused them to go, that's interesting. Although, you know, that's what our media is saying. It looked like the party that won in Spain, the socialists essentially, were going to win anyway. But, you know, that's not necessarily what the Wall Street Journal is saying.
But just for the fact that there might be some in here now, who are they going to lump together to accuse these people?
Yeah.
Certain people. Look at that fellow they accused of being in the bombing, and then now they acquitted him and said that he wasn't involved in it in Spain there.
Yeah. Oh, the lawyer with the fingerprints. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a Laurel and Hardy show in many regards. Harry, this is one where it's I think we all have to walk a very delicate line, and we should have been walking this all along. Of on the one hand, being absolutely skeptical of what this administration says because they have a 3.5-year history of lying through their teeth to us, and on the other hand, saying to ourselves, you know, it's possible that on this particular occasion they're telling the truth. Would you please provide us with some evidence?
Well,
and
yeah,
I think that's how
it's a crying wolf too often, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then that's a problem, and that's a real problem. Harry, I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome back. What's up?
Well, hi, Tom. It's nice to be able to get through to you again. I had something to say the other day. It was about a week ago when I called. We were talking about the conspiracy, and there was another fact I wanted to add, but I accidentally cut myself off and tried to call back, but I couldn't get through. Anyway, what I wanted to say at that time was that there, a Quaker friend of mine, are you there?
Yes.
Had informed me that there had been, this was along the lines of the conspiracy continuum in the world, and she told me that right after 9/11, there was a very small article in the back pages of the New York Times. It was a quote by Osama bin Laden saying that he did not do that. He did not do the 9/11 thing.
Yeah, well, in fact, when they had the video came out of bin Laden sitting around talking with his buddies after 9/11, and he was saying something to the effect of, wow, I didn't expect anything quite like that. I think the best assumption among
but
the intelligence circles.
This was just that he didn't have anything to do with it.
Well,
and
see,
I don't know why
well,
he would say that.
No, here's how I think it works, Roberta. And that is that Al-Qaeda is all about being decentralized. So he says to some guys, hey, go over and do something nasty in America. I don't need to know the details. In fact, don't communicate them back to me because they may be intercepted. Just go do it. We'll give you the money. You know, make it spectacular. And you know, there is a a large, this isn't conspiracy theory stuff. I mean, there are people in the intelligence community who think that bin Laden didn't micromanage that at all. He wanted it to happen. He funded it. He made, you know, it wouldn't have happened without him. But it was really Mohammed Atta who was the one who put the thing together, at least in theory.
Or it was the CIA, a certain branch of the CIA. I mean, we have smart bombs and smart, why not have a smart plane?
Yeah.
I think it's also possible that the people who were in there. Also, what about the fact that there were no Arabs on the passenger roster? And what about the fourth plane being shot down and the fact that there was plane wreckage found around the Pentagon?
You know, Roberta, there's a whole bunch of whatabouts, and I agree that we need the answers to
those things.
What about?
There was never any proof. Yeah. It was Osama bin Laden, and we went and killed everybody in Afghanistan we could get a hold of. This whole thing is about depopulation.
Yeah.
Did you see Braveheart? Do you remember Braveheart?
I did, and Roberta, I've got 3 minutes left, and I got two other callers. I want to move along here. Your points are well taken. I think that, you know, there's this great book out right now, the new Pearl Harbor, that raises a lot of the questions that you're raising. I think it's worthy of checking out. Line one, John in Hershey, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, I wanted to ask you about Saddam for a second. You know now, I heard a few weeks ago that they had appointed a council to try him.
I've heard rumors to that effect. I don't know the details of it.
I just wondered if you had any information on that.
Yeah, I saw the story in the paper, but I don't remember the details.
What exactly he's being charged with? I heard you talking that we're putting a lot of the Ba'ath Party officials back in power to run some things now in Iraq.
Yeah, he's been charged with crimes against his own people, you know, certainly. And my thought on it was, you know, when that first came out, was that this is going to be a huge show trial so that, you know, before the election, before November, so that George Bush can say, see how bad he was? We did a good thing. Yeah, it'd be great for the Bush re-election campaign. We'll see how it plays out. I appreciate the call. I got to move along here. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate formula. You'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Heat waves are especially hard on people in cities, but there are ways to cope, and some cities are doing it. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last summer, a heat wave in Europe killed 35,000 people, and most of the fatalities were in large cities. Scientists who study natural disasters say city dwellers are especially vulnerable in a heat wave because all the asphalt and cement soaks up a lot of heat and holds onto it. Olga Wilhelmi studies the impact of heat waves at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado.
Most of the man-made or built surfaces, such as buildings, parking lots, rooftops, a lot of built environment has a much more effective way to store heat rather than natural ecosystems.
Wilhelmi says daytime temperatures can be especially high in cities during a heat wave, but what happens at night can be even worse. Instead of cooling off, urban areas hold their heat through the night. That means people don't get a break, and the steady heat round the clock can be a trigger for heat stroke. Wilhelmi says many cities are now actively planning to avoid the worst problems of heat waves.
A lot of cities are taking some mitigation measures to respond to heat waves. Some cities develop neighborhood networks to check on single elderly people. And other cities looking more proactively in terms of designing urban landscapes that would be more heat resistant.
Well, Helmi says it's a good idea for cities to designate some schools or shopping malls as cooling centers for people who don't have air conditioning at home. And she says it's always a good idea for health officials to remind residents to stay cool and hydrated throughout a heat emergency. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's a beautiful.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. Brian from New Jersey, who had called earlier, wants me to let you know. He's in our chat room. He's one of the regulars in our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com. Thank you, Brian, for calling and also for hanging out and participating and making many fine contributions in our chat room. 4 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Ken in Ypsilanti, Michigan, listening, I assume, on WSDS there in Ann Arbor.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Ken, what's up?
Well, I just want to make a comment. With our people in charge over in Iraq putting BATH generals that we said were A, number 10, bad hombres under Saddam, who's insane, or Saddam insane, Hussein, back in power, it seems to me like our people that have died since the end of hostilities have died for nothing. They've been murdered. There's no doubt about that. There's no, you can't say they ever sacrificed their life for Iraqi freedom, because the Iraqi people had freedom as soon as Saddam fell. They had the freedom to do anything they wanted to do. So you can Bush keeps saying it.
Well, and in fact, Sadr,
Iraqi freedom.
Yeah, in fact, Sadr was organizing elections. I mean, we, you know, the invasion was in May, and in June, the next month, Muqtada al-Sadr had organized elections in a half a dozen cities, and I mean, the Iraqis were already trying to create their own democracy, and it really is a tragedy, and I know a lot of families are going through a really difficult grieving process right now for their sons and daughters.
Well, I know that for a fact, and I have friends over in Iraq right now. I was in the Air Force Reserve for 18 years, and part of my squadron is over there. And also, squadron from Selfridge Air National Guard Base. Well, my squadron's there from there, too.
Yeah.
But two Air National Guard units are over there, too.
Yeah.
And I know some of those people, and I'm scared out of my mind every time I hear somebody was killed over there.
I know.
And it's just plain simply, they're not sacrificing their life. They're being murdered, systematically being murdered.
Yeah. And it's
saying fun. They sacrificed their life, but they didn't sacrifice their life when somebody killed them.
Yeah.
If somebody kills you on the street of America, it's murder. Over there, oh, it's a big sacrifice. Not in my book. Not in my book at all.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice on the altar of George Bush. I mean, I want to honor those people who took orders, who did what they were told. My problem is, you know, I don't want to minimize in any way and I do think it's a sacrifice that those men and women made over there. My problem is George Bush sending them over there in the first place. This whole neocon thing, it's just wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. It was unnecessary. Ken, thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after migrant workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. Postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature, linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Perhaps you remember that only a couple of years ago, George W. was in a public tizzy over the multi-billion dollar financial scandals pouring out of the executive suites of Wall Street and America's largest corporations. Ripped off investors were howling for blood and the stories of corporate corruption were on the front page. So George Reformer Man Bush leapt to the rescue. He loudly demanded tough new rules to govern greedy CEOs, and he picked William Donaldson to serve as the new top cop on the Wall Street beat. 2 years later, where's Reformer Man? There he is, behind the scenes at the SEC. But he's taken off his reformer cape. Now he's quietly trying to undercut his top cop and to water down those tough new governance rules he once demanded. Donaldson naively thought that Bush really wanted to crack down on corporate finagling. So he has proposed several new rules, including one that would allow shareholders to choose a few independent board members, rather than having all of the corporation's board handpicked by the CEO. All of the shrieks of horror that this caused among CEOs. Hence, the Business Roundtable, the lobbying front for CEOs of America's largest corporations, has swarmed the SEC. Its lobbyists are demanding a substitute rule that guts Donaldson's reform, turning the shareholders' vote for independent board members into a sham. George the Reformer is siding with the CEOs, even dispatching his Treasury Secretary, John Snow, a former leader of the Business Roundtable, by the way, to lobby Donaldson and other SEC officials to vote for the sham. We need not be surprised, since Bush has been busy raising millions of dollars in campaign funds from these same CEOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, Donaldson, however, has not yet buckled to Bush and the lobbyists. To buck him up, call his office and ask that he enact real reform by supporting shareholders, not CEOs. 202-942-0100.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well Patch, it brings you back to Well Patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of Well Patch. Well Patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a Well Patch.
Well Patch, it brings you back to Well Patch.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. One of the folks in our chat room reminded me of a classic clip. Remember the movie Network? I think a lot of us are starting to feel this way. Howard Beale's little speech.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
And I'm not going to take it anymore. I am going to vote for John Kerry in November, even though I'm not a Democrat. Anyway, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day, your thoughts, you know, whatever it may be, Lynn in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Well, I have finally found someone that can express everything objectively that I feel, and I want to thank you. I wonder, Tom, is there a summation of all of the failures of the Bush administration? In other words, is there... I'm reading your books, but is there a paper that where you literally have listed all of these horrible crimes committed by this administration?
I haven't, and in fact, none of my books are really specifically about the Bush administration. They're about larger issues like, you know, democracy and things like that.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, but
there is no such thing. In other words, when I debate with people, I'd like to have facts.
Yeah, well, two books that I recommend. Greg Palast's book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
And The Best Democracy
Money Can Buy by Greg,
Money Can Buy.
Greg Palast.
Greg and Palast.
Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T. And another one is by David Korn, and I believe it's called The Lies of George W. Bush.
The Lives of George W. Bush.
L-I-E-S.
I am very grateful.
Yeah, and
I'm very grateful for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Lynn. And if you look on, you know, if you were to go to, for example, Amazon.com, I encourage people to buy books, of course, from their local bookstores. But Amazon is a great online resource for referencing things. And if you go look at those books on Amazon, you will find links to other books that have been bought by people, you know, who bought that book, and you'll find other similar books. There's no shortage right now of books, and you know, one of the more fascinating ones actually is called, I think it's called Favorite Son. And it was published back before the election of 2000.
Favorite Son.
Yeah, I may be wrong about the title, and I'll have to get that for you. Anyhow, the author has since died. And that was the book in which he revealed George Bush's cocaine arrest and conviction and his having to do community service in Texas, which in his autobiography he bragged about as a 90-day sudden desire to be altruistic. And and there's another book out from before the 2000 election called George Bush's Chemical Dependency, and it's about his affiliation with the oil industry. Fortunate Son, Louise says, is the title of the book. Fortunate Son. Yeah. And then, you know,
and what was the last one you mentioned?
The last one I mentioned was George Bush's Chemical Dependency.
Got it.
And or maybe it's the Chemical Dependency of George Bush. You can plug it into, you know, Amazon search engine. You'll track it down. Those are books that tell basically what he did to Texas. And when you read those books and you see and get a sense of and hear the story of what this guy did to Texas, you can see, A, that he's now doing it to the entire United States of America, and B, that he has never, ever understood the basic concepts of democracy, that he has always been about plutocracy, about the a wealthy elite ruling by virtue of the fact that they have money and power, and believing, as the Calvinists did in the early in the 1600s here in the United States, believing that that wealth and power was a sign from God of divine blessing and rectitude and offering them certitude, you know, that they're right because they have the ability to be right. Anyhow, I'm ranting now. Yeah, Lynn,
very,
thanks for the call. I appreciate
helpful.
It. Okay, good. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you.
Good luck with your reading. Thanks. 12 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Veterans benefits. A new report, the Center for American Progress reports here today that the National Priorities Project has found the Bush administration has proposed, quote, spending on discretionary veterans benefits for fiscal year 2005. That's as in next year, $3.8 billion below the amount needed, according to the leading veterans organizations, you know, like the VFW sort of. Specifically, veterans health care facilities would need $2.9 billion more than has been proposed to meet veterans health care needs. In 2002, last year, the funding shortfall from Bush's 2002 budget, proposed in 2001. The shortfall meant that 310,000 veterans were put on a waiting list for medical appointments, half of them more than 6 months. They have a breakout on a state-by-state level, if you want. It's really quite startling. And according to the Office of Management and Budget, federal civil servants proved they could do work better and more cheaply than private contractors 90% of the time in job competitions last year. I won't read it. Well, I could read it again. According to the Office of Management and Budget, right? This is a nonpartisan arm of Congress. It's a creation of Congress. It's there to provide information. And the Office of Management and Budget did a comparison last year of 17,595 federal jobs. And what they found when they compared these to work that had been done by federal employees that in 4,309 cases were transferred to private sector employees, and they compared the two, they found that federal civil servants proved they could do their work better and more cheaply than private contractors nearly 90% of the time. Now, why would that be? The cons have this whole mythology that they've built up, whatever private industry can do, they can do more efficiently. Government's inefficient. Have you ever stood in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles? You know how inefficient they are. Who wants that, These are the same people, by the way, who say, well, yes, government should be allowed to put people to death. They don't trust the post office or the DMV, but they don't mind. George Bush didn't mind sticking the needle in 164 people's arms. A little irony there, a little oddity. But nonetheless, the con mantra has been, and again, this, I constantly feel, unfortunately, like I have to, I have to put this caveat in here. This is not the way traditional American conservatives viewed this. This is Barry Goldwater would not agree with what these guys are doing. But these so-called conservatives who are really promoting a new form of aristocracy, a new form of feudalism, control of the commons by a wealthy few. And I don't say that like, oh, I'm jealous kind of thing. I say that this is class warfare. I'm saying that because the problem is it's destructive to democracy. I don't mind there being a wealthy few. I just don't want them running my country, thank you very much. And the cons have been selling this thing. People like, multimillionaire Rush Limbaugh and the millionaires who financed him early on. And the others, the whole bunch of them. They're really not conservatives. They're corporate shills. They're fronts for feudalism, for a form of governance which is not democratic, which historically was called feudalism. And in the early 1930s, late 1920s, Benito Mussolini renamed it corporatism. In the early 1930s, renamed it fascism. The merging of corporate and state interests. I mean, look up Mussolini's own words. The guy invented the word. Yeah, I know some of the dictionaries today say fascism, a dictatorship. Look at the dictionaries. For example, look at the American Heritage Dictionary back in 1989 before it got purchased by a multinational corporation. The definition is quite explicit. Fascism, the merging of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism. So anyhow, these guys are... And I am so reluctant to use the word fascist because people think Hitler, death camps, Holocaust, blah de blah de blah, and that's not what fascism is about. Hitler was not, Hitler started out as a fascist in the Mussolini sense. And he very quickly morphed into a cult leader and a dictator. But now what we have is the growing true fascism in the United States. And these guys say, well, you know, you don't want those federal employees. They're not as efficient as private contractors. And therefore, we got to have all these private contractors. And you ask the question, well, why are they more efficient? Well, they're private guys, the private corporations, they can do government jobs better because they're more efficient because they have to compete with each other. Well, first of all, you got all these, you know, I mean, look at Iraq. Who did Halliburton compete with? I mean, there were a lot of companies they could have competed with, but they didn't compete with any of them. That, of course, is just crony capitalism. That's just plain old, good old-fashioned corruption in Washington, D.C., the kind of thing that if this was 1872 and we were looking back on what happened in the Civil War, Dick Cheney would find his butt in jail for the rest of his life, and George W. with him, not to mention a whole bunch of others. That's just plain old-fashioned corruption. But the idea that they try to pitch to you is they are, you know, in a competitive environment, the most efficient wins. Well, yeah, there is some truth to that. The problem is, number one, the giving away of the commons, which we talked about last hour when we had the call from Brian about the zoo. You know, number one, do we want corporations making decisions about democracy, or do we want we the people making those decisions? Because as soon as you privatize it, you lose control of it. And number two, yes, that corporation might be more efficient at the individual worker level, but then it's got to skim 5 or 10% off the top to pay dividends so that people can sit around their pools and pay only 15% tax and no employee tax, no payroll tax. They've got to pay multi-million-dollar salaries to their CEOs. They got to have their corporate jets. They got to have their marketing. They got to buy millions of dollars worth of advertising on TV. They've got all these expenses that, frankly, government doesn't have. The con rant against government employees, pure and simple, breaks down to two things. One, they want to bust the union, because the government employees union is one of the largest in the United States. They want to bust unions right across the board and starting there. And number two, they want to steal our democracy from us. We should not let them. 20 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Now that gay marriage is the new boy in town, they'll amend the Constitution just to keep you down. They say the gay lifestyle is perverted and odd. Well, they should know best. They're always talking to God. Sex and religion.
And welcome back. 25 minutes after the hour. Sex, the old time sex and religion, yeah. It is quite a combination, isn't it? Particularly with the so-called cons these days, using wedge issues like religion and sex to try and distract us from the fact that they're taking over our country, they're destroying democracy, and they're handing it over to corporate overlords that in most cases are not even incorporated in the United States anymore, so they don't have to pay federal taxes. Like, case in point, Halliburton. Anyhow, 25 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Who's in charge of the Iraqi oil industry, by the way, right now? You ever hear of Philip J. Carroll, former head of Shell Oil? We'll continue the list in just a minute. Ray in Bend, Oregon's on the line. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Tom, hi. I was just listening in the last segment, and you were talking about access to information and books about the Bush family and the Bush history. And I wanted to just throw a few more into the mix.
Okay, yeah, Kevin Phillips actually has a book about that. I haven't, frankly, read it, so I can't speak to it. But
I haven't read it. I've got it on my coffee table, and it's one of those I'm getting to next.
Yeah, same here.
It's a fabulous thing. So it's others
a big one.
That talk to us about what's going on with the Bush family. There's a lot of the same material is available on actually for free on the web, and the fellow who's written this is a fellow by the name of Webster G. Tarpley, and it's www.tarpley.net. And
T-A-R-P-L-E-Y, presumably.
T-A-R-P-L-E-Y.
.net. Right. Okay.
And Webster Tarpley wrote a book. It's a few years old now. I first found it about 2 or 3 years ago. And it is fabulous because it is to what I can tell, it's probably the blueprint for the research that Kevin Phillips did, because it goes all the way back to the history of George Walker, St. Louis businessman who became associated with the Vickers Corporation in Britain in the run-up to World War I, when George Bush's great—I'm not sure how many greats there are, but
his great-grandfather,
somewhere back four generations back, they were involved in making big money
war
off the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, war profiteering, and then the Union Bank that Prescott Bush got shut down for trading with the enemy by Roosevelt, specifically the enemy being Adolf Hitler.
Well, you know, the most fascinating story I have found yet about Prescott Bush was his Merry Prankster era back in 1918. Unlike Ken Kesey, you know, who was doing experimentation with CIA-developed lysergic acid, what Prescott Bush was doing back in 1918 was traveling to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, with some of his skull and bones compatriots. And apparently, in a midnight raid, lifted the
Geronimo's skull.
Skeleton of Geronimo.
Yeah, and it's been recently repatriated, hasn't it? Or does Skull and Bones still have it?
Well, now there's another fascinating story, because
I've only got about 30
seconds. In the history of Skull and Bones that I've read just recently, and Alexis, I'm trying to remember her name now, there's...
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. She wrote the book.
She wrote...
Inside
she
wrote the Temple.
That, in fact, the Skull and Bones people attempted to repatriate or give back what they purported to be Geronimo's skull to the Apache Indians, and it turned out, after forensic investigation, that it was the skull of a 10-year-old boy. So the Skull and Bones men were trying to fool the Apaches once again.
Once more.
And can you imagine that at the same time we have a Department of Interior secretary, Gail Norton, who's being sued because of malfeasance in the Department of Bureau of Indian Affairs, where there's $25 billion that's missing from the accounts of Indians.
And on it goes. Ray, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good points. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
15 Chinese men who were captured during World War II and forced to work as slaves in Japanese coal mines will not receive reparations for their ordeal, according to a decision handed down in a Japanese high court this week. In 2002, another court ruled the government and Mitsui Mining Company owed the men compensation for being slaves and awarded them a $1.4 million judgment, but it was overturned on appeal due to the fact that the men waited more than 20 years to bring the lawsuit. In all, some 39,000 Chinese slaves were brought to Japan during World War II, and similar lawsuits are still working their way through the Japanese legal system.
After a 100,000-strong four-day walkout, the Communication Workers of America have reached a tentative agreement with SBC Communications on a new five-year contract. An annual 2.3% wage increase with an additional 1% payment in the first year is part of the settlement, which also includes a five-year ban on some layoffs and potentially moving offshore jobs back to the United States after 2007. However, it does not guarantee job security for new employees and allows SBC to require employees to pay for health insurance for some family members.
Tyson Foods goes after migrant workers again, this time in Canada. At a meatpacking plant in Brooks, Alberta, several dozen workers, mostly from Sudan, tried to establish a dialogue with Tyson managers about their working conditions. Simple things like bathroom breaks and access to company nurses for injuries suffered on the job. Last month, just after the workers organized a committee to approach Tyson management, the entire committee was fired, along with several dozen others. Neither federal nor provincial officials seem willing to investigate the firings.
A unique conscience clause in their union contract is allowing postal workers in Wales to refuse to deliver a mailing put out by the right-wing British National Party. The refusal by 2,000 communication workers union members to deliver the anti-immigrant election leaflet is the first time CWU members have invoked their conscience clause. postal workers say they work in ethnic neighborhoods and will not deliver what they call hateful and inflammatory literature linking asylum seekers with suicide bombers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Teenagers looking for a summer job are finding slimmer pickings and more competition this year. The Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University reports 37% of American teens held jobs last year. That's a decrease of nearly 10% since 2000 and the lowest recorded since the center began tracking it in 1948. Cuts in state summer job programs and increased competition for jobs from a swollen pool of unemployed adults lies at the root of the problem.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big company sell the low cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart.
Ah, yes.
But you drive around, stop in on three or four towns.
Yeah, you remember when America looked like America?
Different if not unique.
I mean, every little town was different.
Different smell, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell. I hate Walmart.
As indeed the Walmartization of America, it's the United States show. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour, broadcasting live from the still semi-free United States of America. We shall see. At least, they haven't come to take me away, ha-ha, yet. But, time will tell. Anyhow, here's this, the Wall Street Journal today. How is this going to be reconciled? How is this going to be reconciled? The U.S. and Britain, this is an article, differences appear over roles in Iraq. U.S. Blair seemed to split on who should control coalition's military moves. And the article is by Mark Champion in London and Carla Ann Robbins in Washington. It starts out, the U.S. and Britain, core allies in the military coalition in Iraq, appeared at odds over whether a new sovereign government formed in Iraq after June 30th should have veto power over specific military operations by the U.S.-led coalition. They go on to point out the draft Security Council resolution on Iraq put forth Monday. This is the proposal that we put into the Security Council to the UN, said, hey, if you guys are going to create a government for us in Iraq, like John Kerry suggested 6 months ago, you need to do it. There has to be a UN resolution, and here's a suggested language for it. That draft resolution is silent on the details of the relationship. Leaving that to later negotiations between the coalition and the interim Iraqi government. So Tony Blair says, and I quote, if there's a political decision as to whether you go into a place like Fallujah in a particular way that has to be done with the consent, that has to be done with the consent of the Iraqi government. And the final political control remains with the Iraqi government. That's what the transfer of sovereignty means. See, Tony Blair knows how to read the dictionary. I mean, when I saw George Bush on TV the other night and he said, we are going to grant full sovereignty, my jaw fell. I thought, either this guy doesn't understand what he's reading on his teleprompter, or he's lying to us again. Or both. Later, Mr. Powell, the Wall Street Journal points out, appeared to rule out an Iraqi veto over U.S. actions in the security field. Powell said, ultimately, however, it comes down to the United States Armed Forces in some way accomplishing their mission in a way that might not be in total consonance, that's like in agreement, with what the Iraqi interim government might want to do at a particular moment in time. U.S. forces remain under U.S. command and will do what is necessary to protect themselves, Mr. Powell said. Well, you know, he really said two things there. One, U.S. forces will remain under U.S. command and will do what's necessary to protect themselves. I think everybody agrees with that. I mean, you know, wherever our forces happen to be around the world, you would want them to be able to protect themselves. I mean, very straightforward. And you would, and you know, if we've got forces in Peru or something, and we do, unfortunately, in this so-called drug war, I think it's limited to 400. No, that's Colombia. We're limited to 400. We can have 400 soldiers in Colombia by law, by congressional law. So what do? They hired a bunch of private contractors in Senada. But that's a whole other rant. Anyhow. So, you know, we wouldn't want some Peruvian general saying, well, here's what you know, this is when you can't shoot back or whatever. I mean, you know, this is just common sense. I'm not agreeing with foreign adventurism. Please don't misunderstand me. But what I agree with Colin Powell that we should be able to defend ourselves if necessary. But that's a little different than saying, okay, we're going to go take this city, and then we're going to go take this city, and we don't like what they're doing in that city. And that's a little different. And so then, you know, as he said, in some way accomplishing their mission in a way that might not be in total consonance with what the Iraqi interim government might want to do at a particular moment in time. In other words, yes, they are sovereign, they are in charge, but they are not sovereign and they are not in charge, at least not in charge of us. And we've got 135,000 guys on the ground with guns and some of the biggest, baddest war planes and tanks that this planet has ever seen. We got missiles. We got 500-pound depleted uranium bombs. We got cluster bombs. And we'll do what we want. Thank you very much. The question, the Wall Street Journal notes, without a trace of irony, I suspect, the question of the coalition chain of command after June 30th already has caused confusion within the U.S. administration. I don't know whether I should laugh or cry. George Bush borrows a good chunk of John Kerry's suggestion about how to resolve the situation in Iraq and then screws it up again. Remember what General Joseph Hoar, H-O-A-R, former commander-in-chief of U.S. CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, said to the United States Senate Foreign Relations Committee a week ago? And I quote, this is the former general of the U.S. Central Command, the former commander-in-chief of CENTCOM. Quote, I believe we are absolutely on the brink of failure. We are looking into the abyss. General Abuzaid, speaking before the Senate Armed Services Committee, we are dealing with a systemic problem. Yes, a systemic problem, as in a problem that affects the entire system, as in a problem that goes all the way up to the White House. This neocon notion that the Project for a New American Century advanced, you know, every empire is good. Every empire in history has believed this. And some of them have actually held it together for a while. Some would say that the Chinese Empire still exists. But, you know, if by and large, the dynastic era of the Chinese Empire is over. The British Empire is more a trading coalition. The French Empire lasted a relatively very short time. The Spanish Empire basically only lasted as long as they could loot South America for gold. The Portuguese Empire, to the extent that it was empire, basically was just sucking resources out of Africa. Good old Prince Leopold. Leading to many of the situations there anyhow. And then, of course, you go back in history. You can look at the Romans. You can look at the Greek Empire. the post-democratic, Alexander the Great, the student of Aristotle. And you know, repeatedly, the Soviet Empire. Empire ultimately gets bit because empire is not about democracy, and democracy is wired into our genes. See, here's how it works. What they have discovered is that animals are instinctively democratic. They used to think, for a long, long time, people believed, I mean, you know, from the earliest science writing up through Charles Darwin, right up until about 5 years ago, scientists knew, biologists, zoologists, taxonomists, people who study animals, animal behaviorists, maybe not taxonomists, I mean, they organize them, but anyhow, knew that most kinds of social animals have somebody that they thought was in charge. There's the alpha female in a wolf pack. There's the alpha male in a herd of bison or buffalo. There's the alpha female among elephants. There's the queen bee among insects, you know, and queen ants. And everybody figured, okay, the animal that is the lead animal must be the one that's in charge. That's the way nature is organized. Nature is organized for hierarchy. That was the belief. And therefore, humans must be too. In fact, you know, they know that in gorilla societies, for example, they'll be the oldest and the biggest of the silverbacks, you know, the grain gorilla who is the alpha gorilla. And the theory was that when there's a decision to be made, that the alpha animal is the one that makes the decision. And for 6,000 years, we have based what we call civilization on that assumption. That there is this wisdom inherent in an elite, in somebody who's the smartest, or somebody who's the strongest, or somebody who's the richest, or somebody who's the most powerful, or somebody who's the biggest, and that wisdom will always work to the good of the society. And that's the belief that animates empire. And what we have discovered in the years since then, what we've discovered just in the last 5 years, research that started in I believe it was Cambridge. I'd have to go back and look. I actually interviewed one of the scientists who did this. There's a chapter about this in the book that I have coming out at the end of July. What Would Jefferson Do is going to be the new title of the book from Random House. And what these scientists found was that the first animals that they looked at were red deer. Okay, red deer are, you know, it's a fairly small species. They're not like miniature deer, but they're smaller than white-tailed deer. And they're indigenous to England, to Europe. And they were looking at red deer. And they noted that among red deer, there will be an alpha male. In fact, the males will fight with each other during rutting season for dominance. And that when it came to picking sexual partners, the alpha male had first choice. And, you know, everybody pretty much knew that about alpha animals, particularly mammals, that that's, you know, how it has worked. And so they assumed that that alpha male red deer, would make all the other decisions as well. But what they discovered was that if they had a bunch of red deer and they were standing around grazing, and, you know, 300 yards away there's a water hole on one side, and a couple hundred yards away on the other side there's a forest where there might be a predator that wants to eat red deer, at some point that herd of deer has to make a decision. When are we finished eating the grass, and when do we go over to the water hole to get some water? Or if we think that there might be a danger from the forest, which direction do we run? And what these scientists discovered was that the animals would be just randomly, you know, chewing their cuds or whatever, looking in different directions, you know, randomly pointing in different directions, and eventually a consensus would develop. The fellow, Tim Roper, is the name of the scientist that I interviewed there, and he said that it's sort of like, he said, if you've ever been in a meeting with a bunch of people, and toward the end of the meeting, people start coughing and organizing their papers and changing their tone of voice, kind of, well, you know, yeah, that's a pretty good, and just there, nobody says it's time for the meeting to end. Now we're going to go have lunch, or now we're going to go to, you know, the next meeting. And nobody says that in most cases. Instead, it just, everybody knows it's time. And he said what happened with the red deer was that when 50% of them pointed in one particular direction, and they're all just kind of randomly pointing in different directions, when 50%, when the 51% threshold was passed, the entire herd would move in the direction that the 51% were pointing. And very often the alpha animal was pointing in a completely different direction and simply came along with the herd. He also pointed out that with decisions that don't have high consequences, for example, say there's not a lot of predators around, there's a lot of grass, there's water, they're nearby each other. He said it might be as little as 30 or 40% in order for a consensus to be achieved. On the other hand, if there's high risk involved, if we've got to go through a part of the forest where there are predators in order to get to the water hole, he said sometimes the entire group wouldn't move until 60 or 70% of the animals were all pointing in the same direction. And again, it had nothing to do with the alpha animal's decision. It's wired into our DNA, democracy. It is wired into our DNA. And that's why empire doesn't work. That's why individual nations that operate as democracies within their own boundaries and for their own people, that works. And that's been the animating vision of the United States from 1776 up until the neocons rose up and took over in 2001 with the appointment of George W. Bush by the United States Supreme Court. And an American empire is doomed to fail just like any other empire because it violates the biological imperatives that are wired into our genes. Not to mention, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years of just clear and clean notions of morality and justice. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New studies of mosquitoes might bring relief from mosquito bites. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Scientists know that mosquitoes find us by smelling our sweat, but they don't know the specific process behind it. They're one step closer to figuring it out, and that could lead to more effective mosquito repellents. John Carlson is a professor of molecular, developmental, and cellular biology at Yale University. He studied smell receptors on mosquito antennas to see how they react when they're exposed to various chemicals in human sweat. Carlson says the receptors react strongly to one specific chemical.
We've now found a particular receptor in the mosquito's antenna that is a very sensitive detector for a particular odor in human sweat. This particular receptor we've studied is only found in female antennae, not in male antennae, and that's consistent with the fact that it's only females that bite us. Another nice thing is that mosquitoes stop making this receptor after they've bitten someone, and that fits well with the fact that mosquitoes stop looking for people after they've bitten one.
Carlson says this research will help explain how mosquitoes find and bite people. Now that they know what receptor the mosquitoes use, they can identify odors that activate the receptors. Smells that attract mosquitoes could be used to lure the insects into traps. In addition, some odors might turn off the receptors on mosquito antennas. Those could be used to make repellents that keep mosquitoes from finding and biting people. These applications could be a great benefit for public health. Mosquitoes carry a variety of diseases that include yellow fever, West Nile virus, and malaria. Carlson says the most effective way of controlling these types of diseases is controlling the insects that carry them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me over and over and over again, my friend. I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Well, are we? I'm looking at two pictures here right now. Satellite pictures.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
Two satellite pictures from NASA. One from 1979 and one in 2003. It's of the ice cover over Antarctica. I'm sorry, over the Arctic. That's the north part of the planet. The 1979 versus 2003. This is on MSNBC's website, msnbc.msn.com. /ID/505-2363. Anyhow, you can. Yeah, I'm sure you can track it down. In fact, I suspect it was a link from BuzzFlash. I may be wrong. Louise, let me know if I'm right or wrong. Anyhow, global warming is hitting the Arctic more than twice as fast as the rest of the planet. Now, there's this movie coming out this weekend. You know, the movie that they say George W. Bush doesn't want you to see, The Day After Tomorrow. The movie is based on, and there's a chapter about this in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and there's a chapter about it in my book, The Edison Gene. The only other really good book I know that's been written about it is William Calvin's book, A Brain for All Seasons. But there's more and more coming out about it in magazine articles and things. And that is that the reason why North America and Europe are not in an ice age right now is because warm water comes up around the southern tip of Africa and comes up, as we call it, the Gulf Stream, across the equator, picks up all kinds of heat. It's a warmer to begin with, coming in from the Pacific, and goes all the way up to just south of Greenland, where it has lost so much heat into the air that warms Europe and parts of North America. And in losing that heat, it's also evaporating, losing water. It gets denser, it gets colder, it settles to the bottom. And you've got this giant whirlpool. It's like 15 kilometers in diameter. It just barely breaks the surface, but you can see it from outer space. And there's it's a river that's 100 times larger than all the rivers on Earth combined, that goes all the way down to the bottom of the ocean and then travels all the way back down around the southern tip of Africa. And when that thing shuts down, the ice age begins. And it'll shut down when the polar ice cap melts so that fresh water can get in there and dilute that ice. That's what the movie's about, and that's what this story is about. It looks like it might be closer than we think. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Jay Mueller for writing and composing our theme music that you're hearing right now. Thanks to Shelby and for RadioPower.org and Ben at White Rose Society for getting us on the web. Thanks to our sponsors in particular. Thanks to the folks in our chat room, and thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious